Well, it's obviously a great pleasure to be here and to celebrate David's... well, I don't want to pronounce this, but anyway, David, apart from things which all you know, that his enormous influence on our science, the thing which is more important to me, that he had enormous influence on me. And for 30 years, I met him 30 years ago, and all these 30 years, we disagreed on things. And it was incredibly useful for me, because, you know, as one of my friends noticed, a typical scientific discussion is like talking to a black hole. Your information is being absorbed, and what you get back is thermal radiation. with David, it's something else. You get a laser beam instead, which can be pretty damaging, I must say. So it went for 30 years, and I hope it will continue. And I'm ready to accept some damaging laser beam for this talk later. the thing I'm going to discuss today is something which actually fascinates me for years and years, and this is the connection between gauge fields and strings. And the reason for which I find this subject fascinating is that, well, first of all, if we really understand string description of QCD, it will provide us with the theory of confinement, but apparently Lenny Susskind is going to tell us why it's impossible or difficult, I don't know. Anyway, that was one of the motivations to understand string gauge connections. I think that there are other motivations, namely, I strongly suspect that the right description of space-time has nothing to do with what we're used to, but it is related to some abstract gauge theory describing strings, and in this way, in quasi-classical limit, describing space-time. And what I will tell you about today are some small steps in this direction. Gauge fields provide us with the alphabet. In the simplest cases, we have the field strength, F mu nu, we have its covariant derivatives, and we form words of these alphabet, which are some gauge invariant operators, single trace gauge invariant operators. Then we can also form sentences by considering multi-traced operators, but in this talk I will be concerned with the words. The basic understanding which arose in the last 4 or 5 years was that there may be one-to-one correspondence between the possible gauge invariant words and the states of the closed strings living in the space one dimension higher, provided that this space is warped. The most familiar example is ADS-CFT correspondence, in which we calculate the amplitudes in the ADS space and relate them to gauge theory correlators. And we have to take the dimension of the ADS space equal to d plus 1 if we want to describe d-dimensional Young-Mills theorem. The That is all well known, and I'm not going to review this old stuff. Instead, I will, or maybe I will review it a little bit. My basic discussion will be related to the following question. When we have gauge invariant words, we know that the Young-Mills equations, or if we have, I'm talking about the Young-Mills equations here, meaning this in generalized sense. It could be n equals 4 Young-Mills or some Young-Mills theory with matter. I think the basic ideas which I'm going to discuss are applicable in all these situations. The question I'm going to pose is the following. We have the Young-Mills equation here, and that means certain relations between the words. What are the corresponding relations between the string states? And can we really put in one-to-one correspondence the Young-Mills relations between these gauge-invariant words and some relations between the string states? To explain you the general idea, I will take a simple and familiar example of the ADS space. And in this case, we know that we have a certain that gauge invariant words are isomorphic. The set of gauge invariant words is isomorphic to the set of the various vertex operators, although it is not completely clear. The precise isomorphism is not completely established. In the ADS space, the vertex operators are more or less the usual string operators. For which the only difference is that since this extra dimension is warped, the Liouville dimension is warped, we have to actually put instead of the exponential some spherical functions for this space, which are in this case just the Bessel function. So we have this K theory here. I remind you that the relation in this particular case goes like that. We have to define the effective action for the vertex operator. We have to define the generating function for the vertex operators. We take some fields multiplied by the vertex operators, define the effective action, and then we have the gauge string duality, this isomorphism between the vertex operators and gauge invariant words is translated into this. An example is that the vertex the tensor vertex operator is related to the energy momentum tensor of the Young-Mills theory. And notice one thing. I'm now quite close to revealing the basic idea that if we concentrate on the gravitational field here, any string theory possesses the tensor graviton. If we concentrate on this graviton, we have general covariance, which was the great discovery by Shark and Schwartz. And this general covariance, if we use this gauge string duality, it translates into conservation law for this energy momentum tensor. That's a rather obvious statement on this level. And notice one more thing, that this gauge transformation of H mu nu and this which implies the conservation law for the energy momentum tensor, actually this this equation is valid only if you use the equations of motion for F-minimum, if you use the Young-Mills equation. So there's a certain sense, certain relation between gauge symmetry, which is generated on the weld sheet by the L minus 1 Virasoro generator, and the Young-Mills equation, although it is still a very trivial relation. Now let's consider a slightly less trivial example. In what I said that the null state, the L minus 1 null state of string theory generates in space-time, and if you go to the Young-Mills site, it generates the conservation law of energy momentum tensor. In the case of ADS5 cross S5, you have still this L minus 1 null state do something a little more, not much more, but a little more than that, because it actually, you can extend this gauge invariance to the whole space ADS5 cross S5. You take you take this graviton field, expand it in spherical harmonics, and spherical harmonics couple to certain fields like that. And as a result, you get a relation from the L minus 1 null state. You get the relation, which is not very exciting, but correct, and it's correct as a consequence of the Young-Mills equations of motion. So that's another demonstration that that there is certain relation between the null states and the equations of motion of gauge theory. And now you probably guessed what I'm going to say next. I'm going to say that string theory has many null states, not only L minus 1 null state. It has L minus 2, it has many null states on many different levels. And the question is what they correspond to in terms of gauge theory. And that's the question we are going to address. If I, Tony, how much time do I have? When I'm supposed to end?
You have another 20-something.
20-something, it's very good. So we will be exploring this null states, and here we come to the, it's much more difficult than what we did before, because we don't know precise isomorphism between the massive modes of the string and gauge invariant operators. Needless to say that this operation is not seen in supergravity. I must say that in general, the supergravity approximation, which takes into account only massless modes, brought us a lot of interesting and exciting things. For example, what Igor said was very beautiful about it. However, my feeling is that there is practically no, it has no future, and if we don't learn how to deal with the sigma model itself, how to deal with the higher level, with the massive level of the string, well, we're stuck. I don't see any way around this, any cute compactification or symmetry breaking. I don't believe, maybe I'm wrong, but I believe that we must really go head on to the sigma model. Anyway, at least for this matter, we need, first of all, we need to improve the alphabet. And then my plan will be first to improve the alphabet, then to count, to find the entropy of this alphabet, to compare it with the entropy of the string modes, and see what we can get. It's very the naive alphabet is slightly inconvenient because we actually not all of these guys are independent. You have Bianchi identity. You have the statement that the commutator of covariant derivatives is F minimum again. So it's a bit messy if we do combinatorics with with the original alphabet. It's much more convenient to take the radial gauge or Hochschwinger gauge. In this case, the letters of the alphabet are simple if we place our word at x equals 0. You see, by differentiating this relation one by one, from here you set x equals 0, you'll find that a mu is equal 0 at the origin. From here you set x equals 0, you'll find that this thing, symmetric combination of this, is 0. And more generally, if you take the general word and if you differentiate this relation n times, you get the relation that the totally symmetric part of it is 0. So the gauge invariant words, they transform according to this Young tableau. With this, it's not a big deal, but now we have to, my next problem will be to count the number, to set the coupling constant to 0, and to count the number of gauge invariant words. So we will ascribe each word of this type enters with a weight, which is defined by its dimension. And there is a small combinatorial problem, which is well demonstrated. It's one of the many problems which can be seen with the four-letter words. You take, say, some letter A, and trace A to the fourth will come with a weight 1. If you take the trace of this guy, the trace is cyclically symmetric, and we don't want to count many times cyclic permutations. So you have to, you can easily see that you have to put the weight 1/2. But for this word, it will be 1/4. So what is how to deal with it in general? And after I solved it, I actually found out that there's a very nice theory, Fourier theory. It's not my alias. It's a great mathematician who developed a very beautiful theory. The Fourier theory says the following. When you have a permutation group, you have to first define the so-called cyclic index. And each permutation, the group is a subgroup of the permutation group. Here it's a cyclic permutation. You have to define for each element of the group, the B1 is the number of cycles of the length 1, Bn is the number of cycles of the length n, and so you form the cyclic index. And then the partition function can be derived in this way. Actually, I don't have time to explain this, but this is a very nice and simple formula, very well, very easily understood, not mathematically, but using Feynman's representation of permutations and of functional integral for identical particles with permutations and cycles. It's actually they're more or less identical to this formula. Anyway, we first count the number of letters of given dimension, and that's how it goes. We basically for the letter with n indices, we have a total number of these letters omega, which are counted in this way, and we have to subtract the constraint that which shows that it is that the totally symmetric part of the letter is equal to 0, that the letter transforms to the according to the Young tableau which I mentioned. So you find first the partition functions of a single letter, and if when you apply Fourier formula, you get the following answer. You get the partition function of the general word, file then is the number of integers which are relatively prime to n. So if the letter n is represented in terms of primes, like that, then file n is a well-known function called Euler function. It's just this product. So it is, of course, well-studied functions. We know all asymptotics and so on. So after we substitute this, notice also, after we substitute the expression which we found for the free energy of the single letter, we get the answer for the partition function. And notice that it should be understood in the following way. We know that the partition function we are calculating it at zero Hopf coupling. This zero Hopf coupling corresponds to the infinitely strong coupling of the two-dimensional sigma model of the ADS5 cross S5. As I said, we have to describe this sigma model, and the sigma model looks difficult. But when we go to the strong coupling regime, we know that there must be some simplicity there, because the dimensions of space-time operators become just integers. So there is definitely a hope to solve this sigma model in the strong coupling limit. And if we manage to do this, we are supposed to get this strange-looking partition function. And actually, the fact that the number of these words grows exponentially on a totally different occasion was noticed, guessed by whom? Of course, by David and by Hashimoto and by Klebanov. They did some numerical estimate for this number, and they got this exponential exponential thing. We have to compare these things with the massive modes, with the counting of the massive modes. What is the first interesting thing? We see that in both cases we have exponential behavior, but with totally different coefficient. And how to interpret it? How to determine the first, let's take the first massive string level and let's try to find the gauge counterparts for it. And this is not an easy problem, but I think we can say something about it. And the way I will approach it is to introduce the principle, the non-intersection principle, which says that when we interpolate anomalous dimensions from small couplings to large couplings, we have so on the as coupling is large, these anomalous dimensions are given by naive weakly interacting string theory, while here they are given by weakly interacting gauge theory. And the idea is that if they have the same Lorentz symmetry, then these curves don't intersect. And that is actually gives us certain correspondence principle, which is quite powerful. Because if we have certain representation R, I'm going to demonstrate it explicitly in a moment, if I have certain representation R, and the same representation at the infinite coupling, this operator must go to the first available site, because if it goes to the higher site, then there will be some intersection of the levels with the same symmetry. So that gives us some organizing principle for the levels, for the anomalous dimensions of massive operators. And I'll give you some simple example. Yes, I'm sorry, that was written here, but yeah. they can't intersect for the same reason the levels in quantum mechanics are repelled, the levels of the same symmetry in quantum mechanics are repelled. Namely, let's suppose that they come close and consider the small perturbation where U of X is trace F mu nu square, it's just the Lagrangian of the gauge theory. And then you have a if you have operator product expansion of this of the standard type, then it's a marginal operator, and then you get the this equation for the usual secular equation for the normal dimension, and you see that there is a repelling of the levels with the same symmetry. Of course, if the symmetry is different, they can easily intersect, and they do intersect.
For generic perturbation, how generic are interactions on string theory?
I think that I'm considering when I'm changing the coupling constant, I'm perturbing by the operator which is invariant with respect to all four symmetry. It's a singlet with respect to O4. Of course, if you do some more general things, that would be different. But I'm tracing delta only with respect to lambda. Tony, okay. So that gives us some organizing principle. And to show you how it works in simple examples, let's take a very simple operator. This is disagreement or not? Okay. Let's take the trace of two field strengths. When we expand it in terms of representations of SO4, there are two operators which correspond to the, or three operators which correspond to the zero. To the masses moles of the strings, which are protected operators, which are just the I'm neglecting all fermions and scalars here, but they could be added properly. You have those traces which keep their normal dimension all the time. Their dimensions don't depend on lambda at all. And there is an operator which corresponds to this Young tableau, which is unprotected. And as I said, I think we have to now work with unprotected operators, and because protected operators already gave us almost all they can. And on the string side, we have to look at the first, since this operator appears first time, according to this organizing principle, it must go to the first available site. And the first available site is obtained by, you take string and you have the first massive mode. And when you multiply, this is the open string modes, which I wrote down here for NSR string. When you take a closed string, you have to take a square of this representation. And there's just one operator of this type. And this vertex operator corresponds to this unprotected operator I mentioned. And now we have to ask what level two gauge symmetry actually gives here. And a level two gauge symmetry essentially means that the effective action of depending on all those fields will be gauge invariant, and it reduces the number of effective fields from d d to d minus two. So effectively, we must get a reduction in the number of operators, and I don't have time to explain it, but. Here, when we look at the Young-Mills equation, it does exactly this reduction from 4 to 3 independent operators. I was not able, though, to prove this in general, because for that, I have to treat separately. I have not only counted the word, or using my earliest theory, I counted the words in general, but here you need to count the words corresponding to a given representation to give the right match. And that's complicated, and but I'm sure it's doable, just I don't know the answer. So on general level, I was not able to trace that this reduction happens, but on the first level it does. And the simple the last simple example, the last simple example which may be interesting is the following. Let's try to apply these ideas to a very simple situation. Let's forget about these complicated gauge theories. And let's look at the sequels one matrix models. In the sequels one matrix models, you have the effective action. You have many very different fields which correspond to discrete states. Also first discovered by David and Igor. And these discrete states, so you have many various fields, and the gauge symmetry means here that the matrix operators coupled to these states must be conserved. The simplest operator is just the energy of the matrix model, and it's obviously conserved. But L minus 2 gauge symmetry means that there are many other conserved quantities. And this infinite number of conservation laws are supposed to, that I didn't check explicitly, although it's almost checked, that they correspond to the fact that this matrix models is described by free fermions. So in this case, and then we have to check, it remains unproved that all the equations of motion of the matrix model are completely equivalent to these higher gauge symmetries. I think the answer is that they really are, but it's not proved. And now, that's it? Or minus. Okay, so the solution of the cosmological constant problem will not be presented. we have hundreds of solutions, of course, for this problem. And I'm adding a number 101 solution, if not 1001. And using these conservation laws, actually, you can see in the matrix models, we have a tachyon, and the tachyon condenses. There is a certain tachyon potential, and you can see that when it condenses, the total energy of the vacuum must be precisely zero. So, and that's indeed the case in the sequels one matrix model. So the speculation is that if we have, that we don't need a superstring theory, we need a non-supersymmetric string theory with a tachyon. And the tachyon condensation, the tachyon has this somewhat puzzling problem. I don't quite understand why it happens even in sequels one case, but it is a property not unlike, it's kind of similar to what Ashok Sen observed in the open string case, in the open string tachyon. He actually demonstrated that the open string tachyon, when it is condensed, it actually eliminates Debrain, so the total energy is zero. What I'm saying is that probably the closed string tachyon is doing the same thing for the vacuum, that at least it seems to be happening in sequels one case, although even there I have some puzzles, that the tachyon has, you see, I had certain preoccupation with the idea for many years that the cosmological problem constant problem is solved by the effect of infrared screening, and like you have a screening of charge in quantum electrodynamics. So there is a mechanism opposite to David, anti-asymptotic freedom effect. And all models which I thought of was the screening was too weak on the logarithmic. And here the Takian seems to be doing this screening more effectively. It also screens to zero the energy, at least in C equals one case, and does it in a, I guess, does it with a power law screening, not logarithmic screening. But it's very speculative. I have practically no arguments for the general case, and I have very weak arguments for C equals one. So it's this last part was omitted, not unintentionally.
Well, to the extent that we have models where we understand concretely related gauge theory and strings,
yes,
they always involve these Ramondre models.
Yes.
Do you see that as being important in the general understanding?
Well, I think it is important in the sense that we need. The answer is yes, but in the following sense. First of all, it can be argued that you need supersymmetry on the world sheet to have connection with gauge theory, because you need, when you look at the open string, you need among the open string states, you must have only vector states. The open string Takian in these theories should not be present. And for that, you need supersymmetry on the world sheet to eliminate, and you need the type zero projection to eliminate this Takian. After you do this, then more or less any curved background is general curved background contains Ramon condensate. Maybe there is much deeper reason for it, but as far as I can see, it's just as it has. It exists because of the world sheet supersymmetry and because it's a stabilizer for the soliton, for the solution. But probably you can suggest some deeper reason for it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's thank the speaker again.